call to order the regular session of the Berlin Mayor and Council for Monday, March 25th, 2019, and has been our tradition for many, many years. I'd like to invite everyone to join the Mayor and Council in reciting the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever. Amen.
Would you please join us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Our first item on tonight's agenda is the approval of the executive session minutes of March 11th.
Motion to approve.
We have a motion by Councilman Goyas to approve the minutes as prepared. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay. Let the record show that the vote is 4-0 and that Councilmember Brunel is not able to attend. Next is the approval, under the Closed Meetings Act of Maryland, there are two reasons for the executive session. First was to discuss the appointment, employment, assignment, promotion, discipline, demotion, compensation, removal, resignation, or performance evaluation of appointees, employees, or officials over whom this public body has jurisdiction, or any other personnel matter that affects one or more specific individuals. The second reason was to consider the acquisition of real property for a public purpose and matters directly related to that. Next is the approval of the regular session minutes.
Motion to approve.
Okay, we have a motion to approve the regular session minutes as prepared. Councilman Goyas, all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay. Same vote. All right, our second item on the agenda tonight is a public hearing on the cable television franchise agreement.
So the federal government, as part of the process that cities go through when their franchise agreement with a cable company is up for renewal, requires a public hearing that focuses on the service that the community has received, any community needs that might have been identified, but it does not allow us to regulate rates. So the purpose of this public hearing tonight is to get public comment regarding any service issues that you had, or any kind of community need that you have identified that you believe that the cable company may be able to help with. To the extent that you're able to provide testimony on that, then that information gets handed off to the attorneys that we're working with as we renegotiate the cable franchise. That information gets taken into consideration. So basically, it's a public comment opportunity. But it does not involve us regulating rates. That was taken away a long time ago.
And how many years is the new agreement for?
I think currently we're looking at 5 years, but we're not presenting a final or proposed agreement at this point. This is more of a fact-finding mission. But people should just keep in mind that the federal government bars us from regulating their rates. So that's not a topic.
Can you talk about the rates?
Can I talk about the rates?
Can you talk about the rates?
Are you asking?
Can a person complain about the rates?
People can complain about the rates, but we're not in a position to do anything about it in this franchise agreement. The federal government has taken away our rate regulation ability many, many years ago.
But any individual's complaints about the rates will be part of the record of the public hearing,
right,
which is submitted to.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay.
But there's nothing we can do about the rates in the franchise agreement.
Okay. Everybody squared away on what we're doing? I'd like to call it, order the public hearing on the Berlin's cable television franchise agreement with Comcast Incorporated. Does anyone have any comments or that they wish to make regarding the upcoming, renegotiation and renewal of the current service we have? Yes. Yeah, come right on up.
So I have a couple
Relax. Whatever's easy for you.
So, internet connection speeds, I just want to comment a couple things on that.
And it's been this way for ages, decades. If you just don't mind saying your name and address for the record and also for the people listening in.
And could you speak into that mic?
Yeah, that way it gets recorded, yeah.
Any other rules?
Right in the hall.
Sure, go ahead.
So Neil Nguyen from 202 South Main. And I have a few comments that I've been researching about the Comcast situation. I am primarily commenting on internet service. I don't really deal with TV service, but here's what I have. So speed and latency are good. I have no complaints there. That part has been just fine. One thing that I'm a little bit concerned about is, the wrong way to put this would be sneakily, but Comcast is sneakily adding data caps to our town, and I just found this out. It took me a lot of prodding when I was following up with customer service that prior to last year, there were no data caps in our area. Comcast had been doing that around the country, and now there's a push to sign a new, not a push, but their new, sign up for a new plan, and you get a reduced rate or whatever, and they're adding data caps of 1 terabyte. And that becomes a problem depending on if you're a heavy data user. And I'm not, my own personal opinion is those data caps are not appropriate. So changing service, downgrading from if you have TV service and cable service, removing that TV service proved difficult for me. It took somewhere around 6 months, and I've got the documentation for 2.5 months of that request where I finally just returned some equipment, and it caused some bugs in their system, and we worked it out after that. That was difficult and probably was unnecessary. And my last thing I have from this are that we do have, I don't know that much about this, but I do know that we have fiber optic running along 113 that is part of the Maryland Broadband Cooperative, and I know that one of the points of, not point of entry, but there's a point of connection is right here in town near Food Lion, and I'm wondering, I can't answer this, but I'm wondering why we don't have fiber optic service to our places inside the town. And I think that with that also close, it seems reasonable to me that we should have access to that. So that is the end of my comments.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And if you need any further detail on any of that, we'd be already contact you to make sure that whatever was passed on is complete as we know how to do it. I mean, some of these things are very more aware of than others.
Sure.
So it'll be okay. She just gives you contact.
Sure.
As a follow-up.
If you give me your contact information, then I can contact
you. Yeah.
I will email you my document.
Cool.
Thank you.
Sounds great.
Good. Thank you.
We don't have a representative here from Comcast.
No, actually, the reason I've got Mr. Komar's contact information on the screen is because he was unable to join us today. He said he's sick, but that I should make sure that his contact information is available in case people want to reach out to him directly. And so that's why it's up here on the screen. And for the benefit of the gentleman who just spoke, I'm going to give him my business card. He wouldn't mind. I'll get it to you. And you can just reach out to him if it works for you. That would be great.
Did anyone else wish to comment or provide any information for the public hearing? Yes, sir. You come right on down.
Yeah. I just got a question about Larry Smith. I live at 1 Peyton Circle. Okay. How come we're not going to reschedule this meeting when somebody can be here and we can get direct questions?
Actually, according to Mr. Comer, typically Comcast representatives are not at these hearings. It's just not.
We invited him.
We invited him. We had this meeting scheduled in January and let him know at that time and asked him if he'd be available to attend. He just told me recently that he's not well and he's unable to attend. But his contact information's on the screen if you want to reach out to him with any specific system-related questions. Or if you have any comments for the public hearing, you're welcome to
add them
to the mix.
I think this is the first time that we haven't had a representative when we discussed the franchise agreement that I can remember the first time.
Well, like I said, he was notified of this date because Mary and I had it sort of scheduled internally and let him know in writing right away. So, and again, tonight, the mayor and council are not acting on the franchise agreement. You're collecting information from members of the public regarding the service.
Okay. Any other questions or comments?
I have something for the record.
Sure.
If I can.
Yeah, sure.
So Sam Card of Cards Technology submitted something in writing to us, which I'm going to give to Kelsey for the record. It gets to fiber versus cable, which was one of the comments that we just heard. And so I'm just going to read a little bit of his two and a half page email, just for the benefit of the audience. When comparing fiber optics and coaxial cable, the basics are that coaxial cable uses copper and data sent and received are repulses of electricity. Because of this, sometimes the weather can affect cable internet service, for example. If a cable TV wire gets wet or gets shorted out in some manner, the service can stop working or have trouble performing acceptably. We have seen this issue consistently in our remote sites, the electric, water resources, planning and economic development departments. Fiber optic cable uses small, flexible strands of glass that transmit and receive information by sending pulses of light across the cable. There's nothing faster than fiber. It is not susceptible to temperature fluctuations that affect coaxial cable. While coaxial cable service has improved in speed over the years, it offers a limited amount of bandwidth. Fiber optic cabling is the backbone of most of our internet and voice infrastructure today and offers nearly an unlimited amount of bandwidth. Because of the reasons previously identified, fiber is the clear choice in reliability. Lots of municipalities with remote sites are moving to fiber connectivity to tie their offices together for more effective communication. Beyond providing faster access to computing resources, fiber can be utilized to more tightly integrate utility systems. For example, monitoring equipment for water and electrical infrastructure can be connected by fiber and instantly alert an engineer who's responsible for maintaining these systems and can provide remote access to these systems. This means changes can be made to the system without the need to roll a truck. Meters and monitoring devices can be connected to communicate with energy providers. Technology like security cameras can be installed anywhere along fiber infrastructure and tied to a central recording system, since fiber can maintain high performance over greater distances than copper connectivity. So we just wanted that folded into the record as well.
Laura, will the full two-page email be submitted for the record?
The whole two-and-a-half-page email was submitted, single-space, was submitted for. And for those of you who know Sam, he's got a wealth of information and can condense it, but for the benefit of everybody's time, I just picked up a few key paragraphs. But yeah, it's a matter of record.
So do I understand it correctly that Sam's saying it would be better for public safety, the public services that we administer, the end consumer, and small business if we had access to fiber?
Yes.
Thank you.
And that's it for me.
Okay. All right. I got something. Mine's not even technical, but it's a basic, a customer called me today and complained she couldn't be here tonight. She says she has a basic cable and it's $65 a month. $65 a month. And the cheapest she can get cable, after that $65, it's the taxes and everything else that goes along with it, her total bill ends up at $96. So you might as well say it's $100. I don't know if that's true, whether you can get a cheaper service, but she says she's tried, and the basic service is $65, and once you pay the taxes and everything else on top of it, it's almost $100. That's her complaint.
I have a question. We received an email from the Berlin Fire Company. They weren't able to be here this evening. Did you receive that as well? I think it should be read into the record. I can summarize it, and we can submit it for the record, I believe. It's something along the lines.
When you say we, did that mean?
I believe it went to the entire mayor and council. But it was a request for their services for weather, basic cable, so that they could have weather access at their
station, and I believe an incentive for their volunteer members to be able to, for recruitment purposes, that their fees be waived for that process. And I also think that we should look into that with the police department as well, okay, since they have to have access for the weather information.
And you, I don't have that email.
Okay, I apologize. I was pretty sure that it went out to everyone, but I will send it in and I'll give it to Laura for the record.
So everybody's aware, and I don't have the exact number, but I do know that we, the town itself, we do receive X number of free hookups, if you will. I don't have that number, but I know, like, for the electric utility, his Comcast is down there. It's not, there's no charge. We have a cable hookup downstairs. There's no charge. Water resources, I know there's no charge. I believe the police station as well, hook up the dams, no charge. This is for cable TV.
Not internet. You should have it, Laura. That's Allen weird. At BerlinMD.gov.
Yeah.
If you don't have it, I'll resend it to you.
I know, because I looked a minute ago.
To resend it?
I'll forward it to everyone.
All right. Any other comments? Already?
Yes. If I have any concern about Comcast, it's related to service. And this is not a citizen concern, this is my concern. When you call Comcast and you're put on hold, and this recording will come on and say that you are eighth in line and it's going to be 10 minutes. Well, you proceed to hold a half hour, and by the time somebody gets on the phone, I'm just as hot as I can be. I think the service at Comcast could be enhanced. It could be better. You call, and eventually you'll get to talk to someone, and then you're scheduled for an appointment 5 days later, and then you have to wait for the technician to show up. That is, it just burns me to no end. I think the service could be better.
Yep, I've got it. So can I read it?
Okay.
Do you mind? Great. So in regards to your agenda item number 2 for this evening, this is a letter from Berlin Fire Company. For the cable television franchise agreement, we would like to make a request. The franchise agreement includes cable television services to Berlin Fire Company facilities at no charge. Our members are attending our town meeting and a mandatory training this evening and are able to attend the public hearing portion of the mayor and council meeting. This would provide an annual cost savings to the fire company. We have cable television at the fire company facilities as a public safety tool to monitor the weather and other major news events. This is also an incentive for volunteers to staff the firehouse and be able to enjoy watching the channels having cable television allows. By having incentives for the volunteers to staff our facilities, reduces response times considerably. But thank you for your consideration of our request entering this this letter into the public meeting for this topic. Sincerely, David A. Fitzgerald, President.
Good.
And I sent that to Kelsey, so we'll have that for the record.
That'll be also included in the official information sent as part of this public hearing. Okay, good. Yes, sir.
Is this the end of the discussion on the cable period?
Well, we're getting ready to close the hearing if there's no other comments.
Okay, I just have a question about the franchise fee.
Sure.
Jason Walter, 207 Powell Circle. And it would apply to Darrell's question directly. Is the franchise fee set now, or is that still a variable? Are you going with the maximum that we can take, or how's that going to happen?
So we don't have a final franchise agreement, so that's under development. There's
okay.
Any particular that you'd like in the franchise fee calculation, feel free.
All right. My curiosity was there was a newspaper article last moment that made it look like that was a gift to the town of Berlin. And I guess I was curious about the amount and also wanted to ask if there was clarity that it's not really a gift to the town of Berlin. It's a fee that we, as a town, request from them. It's a tax on top of our bill that comes with the town of Berlin. Mm-hmm. So each user pays that fee
don't know the answer to your question because...
Well, it's not really, that wasn't a question, that's a statement. It was not clear in the newspaper article. The newspaper article made it look like that tax was a gift from Comcast and not a fee we request as a municipality. The franchise fee is not a requirement, it's optional. It's what the town of Berlin charges to Comcast, which is then charged to the consumer. You understand?
Mm-hmm. Basically, it's passed through. I mean,
correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. I think we understand. We do. Thank you.
Sure. So, what are you suggesting?
Well, I'm not suggesting anything. Just that it wasn't clear the way it was reported in the newspaper. It made it look like Comcast gave us this money as a gift, like it's generosity. Somewhere along the lines, it was the maximum that they could give us by the letter of the law, but it's not a gift or a fee. That's all.
Okay. Well, appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you for the clarification. Yes, sir.
So has Comcast given the mayor and council a new franchise fee at all? So how much they're going to charge you, us for the next one if it's approved?
You're talking about for the new one? In other words, is there an amount
set for what we're going to pay
for the new agreement?
No, it hasn't been set. And usually it's a function of how much money they make. So franchise fees are typically charged by cities for the right to access the right-of-way that runs through the community. It's true that they pass it through, but it's pretty common. It's pretty common practice. And then for franchise agreements, usually for cable franchise agreements, typically it's a function of how much money they make off the services they provide in this community. So I don't have that number for you now, and that actual formula has not been developed yet. That's part of what we'll be working on.
Is that something we can share when we get that?
It will be part of the proposed agreement when that comes up for the mayor and council's approval, probably 4 or 5 months from now.
Okay.
So they're going to send you all this information if you don't have it. This is the only meeting we're going to have, so it's up to the people at that desk to decide whether they accept these fees. They go up or not, right?
Or go to another provider. Yes.
Yeah. Well, I believe that if we're paying for it, the taxpayers and the people of Berlin are paying for it, when you find out all the particulars, I think there ought to be a public meeting about it. So then the public has an input.
So the franchise agreement is required to be adopted by ordinance, which requires another public hearing. So the purpose of this public hearing is to gather information, not to approve the franchise agreement. Now that we have the input, assuming there's not more, then we'll enter into some more detailed negotiations where in part we'll work out the franchise fee. And then that proposed document and all the details will come back to Mayor and Council for approval as part of a public hearing process. So then there'll
be
another
opportunity.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Okay.
And another public hearing, another opportunity for input on the proposed agreement.
It's something, thank goodness, we don't have to do every year. Every few years.
Yeah.
Okay. And any other comments or questions? Seeing none, I close the public hearing, and we'll move on to number three on the agenda. First is a motion 2019-08, motion approving the transfer of one equivalent dwelling unit, or EDU, from Lot 33, Parcel 1369 in Woodland Park Subdivision, from there to the Habitat for Humanity at 21 Jefferson Street. Is there anyone here from Habitat? Yes. Come on down and kind of explain why you need this. Why you'd like this approved? Just state your names and where you live and be right on board.
Josh Esworthy, 138 Intrepid Lane.
I'm Matthew Manos. I'm at 9333 Libertytown Road, and I'm the past president of Habitat for Humanity Board of Directors.
Also past president and on the board.
Okay.
So I don't really admittedly have a background on what we're doing here, but Ms. Burbidge is generous enough to donate this property, and we're always looking for opportunities to continue to expand our reach here within the county and within the town itself. We've got, as you guys are aware, a lot of really positive things going on. So when these opportunities present themselves, we try to seize the day and, you know, make things happen. So that's what we're looking to do.
And again, that's, we've been very pleased with all the work that, and projects he's done in the town of Berlin. So we certainly don't want them to stop.
For sure.
And this will be, I think, the first one in what I'll call the historic downtown area.
Correct. And of course, it's a continued partnership with the town itself. And we've come a long way since I've been on the board now, 6 years, and Josh is here just over almost 8 years now. And, you know, we've grown, and you know, now's the time.
So just so everybody understands, I think some people will understand more than others. So what's being asked here is that an EDU that's already been assigned to the Woodland Park subdivision for a lot there would be then transferred to 21 Jefferson Street, where Habitat has some plans. And the town doesn't get any more income, but that original lot no longer can be built upon unless they come back and start the whole process again. But we're just basically transferring an existing EDU from one property to the next.
This would be an extra EDU that's on the property. I had Jane double-check that. Horton Davis and then will join us tonight. But she and I did talk about this, and she doesn't see any issues. It's an extra underutilized EDU that, you know, could easily be transferred.
Property would have a total of two EDUs. Is that what you're saying for the new?
Well, I'm saying that the existing property has an extra one.
Has two.
And so,
So they still have one.
Yes.
But is this? What,
they
is
can
there,
spare this one, and it can go over to the Jefferson project without any problem from the existing original property owner.
All right.
I'll make a motion that we approve this.
Okay, we have a motion by Councilmember Brittingham to approve the transfer of one EDU from the Woodland Park subdivision to Habitat for Humanity at 21 Jefferson Street. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
Good luck. Good luck with your continued work. Okay. Under 3B, the electric utility administrative matters. First is a motion 2019-09, which is to reapprove the town's Pennsylvania, Jersey, Maryland risk management policy, and reauthorizing the town administrator to represent the town in hearings before the Maryland Public Service Commission. Ready. So.
Yeah, this is the first of three administrative matters associated with the electric utility. We usually bring this to you every spring. The PJM, which is essentially the electric grid, requires us as participants to have a risk management policy. This policy was revised in 2015. Every year, our electric utility attorney, Jill Barker from Betson Holtz, recommends that the Mayor and Council review the risk management policy, see if you need to make any changes to it, and then reapprove it as a matter of course. And then in that process, she also recommends that you adopt a motion that authorizes the town administrator to represent the town in hearings before the Maryland Public Service Commission and to take actions there on its behalf related to the proceedings. So typically every December we go to the Public Service Commission to discuss the PCA calculation, and that's usually where I appear on the town's behalf, represent the mayor and council, and then take whatever appropriate actions.
PCA is purchase power cost adjustment.
Yeah. I don't intend to speak in code, but thank you for clarifying. So that also is a standing administrative item that's come to you every spring. Usually those two things have been pulled together.
Okay. Does anyone have any questions for Laura? This is basically a continuation of the policy we've had for the last several years in dealing with risk management. All right. We have a motion.
Motion to approve.
We have a motion by Councilmember Goyas to approve the town's risk management policy and reauthorizing the current policy again for the next year. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Thank you.
Great.
And
next up, you heard me mention Jill Barker, Betson Holt. Next up is reapproval of their contract or engagement letter. This is also something she recommends as a matter of course, that you review this annually. And we're not recommending any changes. I believe it was last adjusted last year to accommodate additional services that we thought that they might be able to help us with, particular wholesale electric markets and work in that particular area. So there's no rate increase proposed, no change in services proposed or scope of services proposed. It's just something that Jill recommends that the Mayor and Council do every year, take a look at it. If you've got questions or concerns, let me know. Otherwise, we would ask you to reapprove this as well.
This is, again, the current agreement we have, and it's just continuing it without any changes.
No rate changes, no scope of services changes.
Okay. Motion to approve.
Okay, we have a motion to approve. 2019-10, which is approving the agreement with Betts and Holtz, who represents us as our attorney, as our attorneys for the electric department. They're based in Baltimore. And all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay. Again, 4-0. Okay. Number four on the agenda, a resolution 2019-02, a resolution reaffirming the master services agreement for wholesale electric purchases and also authorizing execution of schedules and confirmations with certain parameters for the town.
Right. So this is sort of anecdotally described as the annual trading resolution. This was something that came to you in November of last year, which authorizes the mayor and the town administrator to transact power, electric power supply purchases under certain conditions. Delivery period commences on January 1, 2021, and the purchases are to be consistent with state and federal requirements. The per megawatt hour cost can be no higher than $42 there we go, per megawatt hour. At the DPL zone or closer to Berlin, the town administrator has documented evidence that competitive practices were followed. The term of purchase is no longer than 6 years, and the last date of delivery is no later than December 31st, 2026. This was something that you acted on in November, and again, Jill's asked us to take a look at this annually and re-improve it annually. That way there's no doubt when the market gets ripe for a transaction. What this does under those conditions is allow the mayor and the town administrator to transact electric power purchases. The goal here is to put us in a position to continue to reduce the cost of power to our customers. And to the extent that you're comfortable with that, we'd recommend that you approve that resolution.
And just as a note, because I'm sure most people wouldn't have any reason to think about it, for many, many years, probably decades, the town, as many other similar customers, would wait to almost the end of a contract to be fulfilled and then go on the market and try to and renew the contract. And what this was happening is more and more often as years went by, the rates would be higher than what was anticipated, and the rates would cause our local rates that we charge to have to go up dramatically. So when we adopted this policy, it means that we follow the market. And of course, with our electric utility consultants, and every now and then, when the market is moving downward, we have then the option of getting a contract, put it set in stone, and then it might not go into place for 2 years. But that low rate, when it's available, we can capture it. And then if the rate goes up between now and when that contract goes into place, it doesn't affect us at all. And I do think it's been one of the reasons the electric utility has been able to reduce our cost to all customers over the last few years. So, does anyone have a motion?
I have a question.
Sure.
Now, we talked about we generate a portion of our electric is captured through renewable sources mm-hmm. through the form of RECs.
Mm-hmm. Renewable energy credits.
Yes, and. Those credits are also at a low currently. Could we consult with our experts to figure out whether we should be locking into some duration contracts with those as well.
Sure.
Without that, I have a motion to approve Resolution 2019-02.
Okay, we have a motion by Councilmember Tindall to approve Resolution 2019-02. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? All right. Thank you very much.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
And next is our mid-year budget report from by Finance Director Natalie Saliti.
Good evening. I'm going to bore you for a little bit with the numbers. So July through December, 6 months, but by we decided to put it in a little snapshot just to see where we stand with revenues and expenses. So on the screen right now, I'm going to present each fund individually and basically give you the outlook where we stand with revenues collected, where we stand with expenses as of 6 months, so July through December, comparatively to the budget of fiscal 19, which is this fiscal year budget. And also we'll give you an overview of the percent of revenues for services provided, where we stand in charts and graphs. So on the left side is actual budget for 19, July, December, actual numbers, and this is, of course, the difference. I also included a line of 2018 actual numbers, just in case there is a question where we stand with last year. For general fund, total revenues were budgeted at $5.6 million. We're, as of right now, $3.8 million and about 32% remaining. As a practice, we receive intergovernmental revenues, which is a small grants or income tax, probably in close May and June. So we will catch up on those numbers a little later. The total expenditure is budgeted at $7.3 million. We are at $3.2 right now, a little behind on that at 55%. Trying to be moderate and trying to save as the budget goes off, because any extra will basically go back to reserves.
Just so I'm clear,
okay.
I'm looking at the percentage,
mm-hmm.
and it is for the total revenues. You said it's 32% remaining
to collect to complete our budgeted number.
So the amount collected thus far is 68%.
Yes.
And on expenditures,
mm-hmm.
the amount expended thus far at where it should be 50 is only 45.
Right.
Okay.
So general fund revenues consist of taxes. This is the largest part, is 54%. The next part is intergovernmental revenues, which is small grant and the county one-time grant. Also, we have service charges, impact fee a little bit, interest income, and licenses and permits. General fund actual expenditures, this is 6 months snapshot. We have public safety at 37%, public works 16%, general government consists of all administrative, finance, and et cetera departments' expenses. Then we have planning, community, and development, 8, recreation and parks, and our debt services for general fund is at 8%. Electric fund, we have budgeted $5.5 million. In revenues, we are at $2.4 with a difference of $3 million. We have expenses at 5.7 budgeted. We're at 2.3 with a difference of 3.4. So it's pretty much in within the line, half year, another half year left, pretty much 56% left. Most of the electric fund revenues are purchase power. We have service charges of 2% and a little bit of interest on outstanding past due accounts. Electric fund expenditures consist, the most part of it is actual purchase power, where we pay to purchase the power, personnel cost, supplies and operations, and repairs and maintenance are the most five largest parts of the expenses. Water fund, we have budgeted for fiscal 19, 1.1. We're at 463 in revenues. Total expenses, 1.1. We're at 443 on the expenses. So the variance is pretty much within the line as well. We have half year remaining at 60%, 40% left. So it looks good. Actual revenues consist most of it collected from service charges, which is the water sales, a little bit of miscellaneous and sales of services where the departments provide some services and we bill either vendors or the residents. The water fund actual expenditures for 6 months consist most of it of the personnel, repairs and maintenance, supplies and operations, and then a little bit of contracted out there. Sewer fund, we have budgeted 2.6, collected 823 for 6 months, remained in comparison was budgeted 1.7. Total expenses, 2.6, collected 995. We have 1.6 remaining, so it's 68%, 62% for the sewer fund. Actual revenues, that's actual expenses, sorry. Top of the slide. Personnel expenses, 46%, supplies and operations, 18%, and we have repairs, maintenance, contracted services. That one since it's repeating itself. Stormwater fund, I just want to mention here, in the total revenues, I included grants as well. So the stormwater operates for operational expenses. It's just collecting the stormwater fees. The rest was budgeted to do the capital projects, relying on the grants received. So as of right now, we are not there yet. So that's why you see the high percentage. We budgeted 1.3, including the grants in that number, and expenditures is 1.6 for the capital projects as well. Received in 77,000 and expensed 83. Those are not grants related or capital project related expenses. Stormwater consists of the service charges, most of all for the revenues, and personnel expense and professional services too. Largest pieces of the expenses. And that's all I have. Thank you.
I have a question.
Sure.
Can you print these and have them available for tomorrow night's public listening session?
Sure. I just need to correct that one slide and then
that's
I
perfect.
Will print them. Sure.
And can you also send them to us?
Sure.
Thank
Thanks.
You.
Is this data that you have been able to generate from reports with the new Tyler system?
I'm able to generate reports in compressed view, but the actual charts and graphs, it's manual work outside in Excel. But yes, it's much more easier to produce the reports. And also I can put the date range the way I needed it, or I can put categories the way I needed it. So yeah, Tyler is very helpful here.
Well, good.
Yeah, and just an example, like on the stormwater, you know, it's together. Maybe we might want to think about in future reports, because the fees, I think it was residential stormwater fees produce about 170.
Residential is about 100, and commercial about. I'm sorry. Yes, residential about 100, and commercial about 66. So it's 166,000.
Okay,
total.
166 instead
yes.
of 100. But that is the money that we then use to leverage for grants, and. And so far, we've, in grants, received just under $3 million for stormwater based on the $166,000 per year we've been collecting.
That's for the prior years.
Yeah,
right.
Prior year, yes. So now, and just what people understand, if we don't collect those sewer or stormwater fees, we can't even apply for the grants.
Sure.
It's basically one of those things, we have no money, You can fill out the paperwork, but you're guaranteed not to get anything. And I think that's another part of this, is that we have to raise a certain amount of money to become eligible for the grants that are all that are provided by the state, but they're not automatic. There's all kinds of requirements that you must meet to even be considered, and then you're in a competitive process to get awarded. So, yes, sir.
How competitive is that? There aren't that many municipalities with a separate stormwater fund.
And maybe it could be the exact millions, but the amount, even though there's few, the amount of money it takes to do it is millions and millions greater than what even the fund has. I know,
Yeah, I think we submitted two grant applications last summer, one for a project that was roughly $75,000, which we received, so we were successful on that one, and then another project to Grand Bryce and Nelson to finish up that neighborhood, and then also to do some work off of Bottle Branch to sort of repair and enhance that culvert, and then rebuild that creek to sort of keep our wastewater treatment plant from being exposed to flooding, which it's come very close to. And I think that one was about $1 million. That was unsuccessful. And my understanding from talking to DNR is that was one of 26 applications. So it may not be, it may not be municipalities or maybe other government agencies applying, and it may not require you to have specifically a stormwater utility, but these are generally larger jurisdictions that have other resources that they can draw on, that they can provide as match or provide in-kind services to. So the fact that we're a smaller municipality with the with the stormwater utility does help us when it comes to applying for grants, because we're able to offer up in-kind services and match.
But I think that overall we're optimistic that over time we're going to get the money that we need. It's just not going to be something you can automatically count on. Sometimes you have to apply a couple, two years in a row to get what you want. Sometimes it might be three, but I don't think we're thinking we're going to be shut out, because part of what they take into account is what you've done so far. And just in general, we've done about $3 million of these improvements in our stormwater system, but we have we know of 3.5 more we have to do before we can say we did all the basics in all the neighborhoods in town. And it's mind-boggling.
All the neighborhoods in town?
Well, all the neighborhoods that where there's stormwater improvements that are needed.
I think it's closer to 10 million.
Or 10 million?
Yeah, I hate to correct you. No, I think it's closer to 10 million.
If we do every single...
West Street alone is 3 million plus.
Okay, West Street.
And the stormwater improvements behind Henry's Mill were pretty expensive as well.
Yeah, that one we applied for the year before, and I can't remember that number off the top of my head, but I do believe it's about $10 million.
So it's $10 million versus another $3.5 million. Yeah. Okay, so that's, yes.
What was done behind Henry's Mill? I'm curious, because one of our ponds takes water from Henry's Mill, even though it's, you guys say it's ours and not your responsibility to take water from the other neighborhoods. What was done there?
We submitted for a proposal to have some work done with a retainment pond behind Henry's.
Again, that was 2 years ago. I apologize.
I don't have that
forefront of my brain, but that was not a successful grant application.
So nothing.
But it's still on the list of things to be completed.
Yeah, if you want, I can send you the priority list the Mayor and Council approved last year, the order of priority for projects. And so we're working through that. And if I remember correctly, Henry's Mill, Henry's Green is either third or fourth.
Our stormwater management system has failed since you all had approved the design. I don't think we're aware of the priority.
Is that in that scope? Can we check to see if that's in that scope?
Check.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Or?
The personnel expenses on the graph, can you go back to that graph?
On the stormwater?
Yes. That's 66% of the budget so far this year. But the entire stormwater budget is 66% personnel expenses?
This is 6 months of July, December actual expenditures. So as of right now, the expenses for personnel is 66% of the 6 months expenses, actual expenses. We have two employees in
the stormwater. Do you know what that amount is? Out of curiosity.
What's the salaries total for
this entire time?
10.
Basically, some, because it's, you know, everybody has a different opinion about how much
we should pay. The numbers what you budgeted, it was $3.96 million for personnel expenses.
That was for an $18.2 million budget.
Correct.
Just to give it some perspective, it wasn't for a $6 million budget or $8 million budget. So, you know, that's a matter of what you think is a correct percentage of our overall budget for personnel. And basically, I think most of our services are personnel intensive.
They are. They're very high on state averages for personnel costs. Okay.
Yes.
So we're doing all this stormwater management. Some of it's in new developments that have come online. And we're still annexing property that we're going to be responsible for it. I mean, how can you justify expanding everything when we can't pay for what we got now?
One of the things, since we've adopted these standards, those developments could have never been built the way they were. When I was first on the council, we couldn't even enforce basic zoning requirements until a very large development was approved, was built, and people said, why hasn't this been required? Why hasn't that been required? That was a turning point in giving the town the authority to have standards. And I think that's the same thing we're going through with stormwater. Most of these things have existed well before, you know, our grandparents were thought of. And when in the past, we could be annexed and not have any stormwater requirement whatsoever because we didn't have anything on the books and we didn't have anything to go by. It's not blaming any of our predecessors or whatever. It just wasn't considered. It wasn't considered something towns did. And now, you know, it's something we know that over time we can get a control and mitigate what's there. And any properties that come in have to meet the new high standards. So it's kind of like, all right, we'll have to spend a long, long time fixing all the places that need stormwater upgrades. But anything that comes in new can't add to the problem because they all have to meet the newer higher standards and be self-contained. That's why you see them, at least just lately, the stormwater ponds, everything that was dictated, you know, 15 years ago, whatever, is obsolete. The amount of rainfall, the standards, we had to hire our own engineering firm to come up with actual uses just so we can predict what we're dealing with versus what we've been handed by the federal government for the last several years, that is just way behind. And it's nobody's fault, it's just things are changing so fast. So we have to determine, yes, there are ups and there are positive and negative things for any decision like any land use decisions we make. But the fact that one of them in annexation is, if it doesn't meet the stormwater requirements, it's gonna add to the problem, then they just won't do it. Again, you're perfectly entitled to believe that, and we'll just, you know, have to make the best judgments we can. But assuming that nature's going to fix these things all by itself, regardless if it's annexed or not, it's just not happening.
I think that's the key problem. So the towns didn't really do this stuff. Most did. We have a fair amount that was neglected or not really properly planned. Most towns did manage stormwater in one way, shape, or form. I think it's fairly unique that ours did not.
But one of the things I think is we're right on the cusp of the flooding, the serious flooding, and we're not waterfront.
I'll say 7 out of 10 areas where we experience stormwater problems, have historically experienced stormwater problems. Some are exacerbated by new pavement. You have the Food Line Shopping Center run
Or it may also have been not aware, lack of awareness. I mean, that's the thing. Things, I think of how much things have changed in 10 years in terms of what we now know and what we're now expected to do, and we're expected to do something about it. Whereas if we had a similar conversation 15 years ago, everybody would say, what are you talking about? You know, I don't know. I think part of our challenge, regardless of what we do, is trying to meet much higher expectations of what we're supposed to manage and fix and prevent than just a few years ago. And that's fine. You know, there's nothing wrong with that.
No, the standards are good. The improvement's good.
And I think it's good that we are challenged to meet higher expectations, and we just have to figure it out. You know, some things we're trying to look at over 5 years. Some things, you know, maybe over a couple years. But it's a moving target. But I think, you know, whoever's sitting here will have that same challenge. And again, public's input, and the more you know, the more you can provide helpful feedback. So we encourage that. Any other comments or questions or suggestions? No, thank you very much. We do appreciate it. Okay. All right. Then next we have our departmental reports. We'll start with the town administrator's report.
Oh, I think
you
should start with Natalie.
Oh, Natalie. Yeah, well, Natalie, do you have
anything? Just a reminder, April 1st, 5:30, first workshop for fiscal 2020 budget, general fund, and for a company will be presented.
Okay. Thank you. Next is our administrative services director, Mary Baldwin.
A couple of things. As you may recall, the main entrance to Stupid Cater Park has a rather large anchor in front of it. That anchor is actually from the USS Decatur and is the property of the Naval History and Heritage Command, the NHHC. Mm-hmm. They have implemented a new artifact loan system, so we're in the process of reviewing a new loan contract, although I actually have never seen an old loan contract. They've gotten their act together, and so we'll be having some information on that coming up. But we had to submit a report for the first time in many, many years with pictures of the anchor and an explanation of what its condition is, and we'll be doing that on an annual basis going forward. The Parks Commission and the Town in General is gearing up for Cleanup Day, which is April 27th this year. We're excited. We've got a couple of new things this year. We're partnering with Comcast. Comcast Cares Day is a volunteer incentive that Comcast participates in which every volunteer that shows up for their Comcast Cares Day, they will make a donation. In this case, they'll be making a donation to Worcester Youth and Family. This is not just Comcast employees. This is every volunteer that shows up. So we're really hoping to get a good turnout this year because it'll be a very important benefit for Worcester Youth and Family. We will also, during Cleanup Day, be participating in DNR's Backyard Buffer Program, in which they give away packets of tree seedlings with the intent of increasing the tree canopy, increasing wildlife habitat, and that kind of thing. So there will be more information about that. And our lunch this year will be provided by the Kiwanis Club. There's a lot of new information. Keep an eye out in the local media and various places for more.
A couple things on the park. I walk the path a lot. The cork recycle.
Uh-huh.
It's got a lot of defects.
Yes, and Public Works is aware that unfortunately during the winter there's not a lot they can do to address it. It's a problem. It's something that was very unfortunate. We were kind of a model community for that, and they learned that we're just a little bit too far north for that type of path to really work. So it's something Public Works addresses as it comes up, but it is unfortunate.
And Second thing is our brand new tennis courts. For some reason, every time I walk the park, somebody's doing something besides playing tennis. Lacrosse was out there one day. Kickball. And three or four pets inside of the tennis court. I think we need a sign at the entrance of every door or gate saying that it's for tennis only.
Okay.
Because those tennis courts are look too good to have them.
No, I do understand what you're saying. My fear is that we'll end up with sign pollution, where it's just overwhelming with little signs. But we can certainly put a simple sign up that says the courts are for tennis only.
Right. I think we need that. Thanks.
Thank you. Right. And next is Police Chief Arnold Nowing.
Nothing to report this evening.
Right. Thank you. Electric Utilities Director Tim Lawrence.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I just have a few things to report on. Sunrise Church, we finished up the transfer today. They are now on the town's electric system.
Good.
Long time. So.
Yeah.
That's completed. And then also tomorrow, Bay Diesel is going to start the work on number two engine. It's where they have to rebuild the top of the engine, the cylinders and all that. The engine was built in 1999. It's 20 years old, and it's due for the top side of it to be rebuilt. They're starting on that.
How long will that take?
What's that?
How long will the rebuilding?
They figure it'll take about 4 to 5 days, something like that. So they'll be doing that. And that's the big project that's going on right now. And then we start meter reading tomorrow.
Okay.
Other than that.
Any questions for Tim? Next is Dave Englehart, our planning director.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I just have one item. Two meetings ago, Council Member Gullius asked me to let you know when we had some kind of design back from the Ocean's East people for the entrance there, the reworking of the entrance. Well, we have a meeting. They're trying to pick whether it's next week, April 2nd or April 3rd. We're going to have a site meeting out there with our engineers from DBF and their engineer. So we'll be getting a finalized plan together for that so they can get started on that work out there now that the weather's improving, in conjunction probably with the improvements to Seahawk Road, to the surfacing of Seahawk Road, which they had already talked about for this spring. So we'll see if we can get that moving first before they get too far along, because they're working on the last two buildings in phase one now. So we see if we get those improvements done before the buildings are done and before the project, that phase is finished. So this coming week.
What's the date?
The second or the third. I got an email about 4:30 this afternoon asking all of us involved to pick a date, and so far about half of them had said they were open for either day. So if you like, I can let you know.
Okay.
I can send you an email when we pick a day and a time. If you like to be there, that'd be great. Hopefully it's not pouring rain like it's been every other time. But I'll be glad to do that. Send
Dave,
you an email.
Make sure you include me on that, so if all
sure.
of them want to go, we can agendize that as a meeting.
Sure.
Thanks.
Thanks, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
All righty. Thank you. Next is the town administrator's report.
Oh, I think managing director's next.
Nope.
I don't have to be.
Okay.
No. I have a few things. April 2 in Cambridge for a liability legit workshop renewal, so I don't have any idea what our premiums are going to do for FY20 as it relates to liability. Have a better deal come April 2nd. On the 3rd of April at 10 a.m. in the conference room, Chris Carroll from Dealey will be here to discuss health insurance trends and give us an idea. We don't have any numbers yet as far as renewal for FY20, but that's our formal initial meeting. We've had a number of meetings, but this is you're all invited. It's as dry as cotton, but you're more than welcome. On the 4th, from 9 to 11, our nationwide 457 deferred comp for have interest. I ask that, and it's posted out there, it'll be in the newspapers as well, but I ask that you RSVP to the number that's on the flyer, because I have to cap it because of the limited seating. If I have a full turnout, that's great, but it is going to be limited to 75 folks. And then we will have a date to be announced in June, a brand new defensive driving course that will be open to our employees as well as surrounding municipalities.
Okay. Anyone have any questions for Jeff? Any questions? Next is our town administrator's report.
Yeah, I have two things for you tonight. We have a survey, sort of a follow-up to the Making Berlin Resilience meetings that we had last week. It's back there on the table. If you get a chance to fill it out while you're in here, appreciate it, and you can just leave it with Kelsey, and then we'll fold that into our public comment for that process. And then also wanted to mention that we're hosting Worcester Cares on Saturday, March 30th. This was an event we did last year as well. This year we're holding it at the Berlin Intermediate School, 309 Franklin Avenue. All of our partners that are helping us with this event are creating a one-stop shop for individuals and families looking for support or assistance. Worcester residents will have the opportunity to learn all about services they need the most. This year, we've added several exciting free events to Worcester Cares, and I want to thank Josh and Charlene for being so helpful when it comes to advertising what we've got going on. I would like to point out this is a free event, and at this free event, AGH is going to be providing 13 health screenings. Anchor Away will set up their video gaming trailer. Choptank Electric Trust has provided a Maryland food bank drop on April 3rd with a voucher to be given out at the event. And Evergreen Lodge 153 will provide child identification program setup and information. There's a press release that's gone out tonight, so look for more information in the Bayside Gazette later this week. Lower Shore Enterprise will be shredding papers and documents for a donation to be provided to Worcester Technical High School for coveralls. So for $5 a box, you can get your items shredded. Thank you for that donation. I also want to make a special thank you to the Town of Ocean City for providing free shuttle services from the multipurpose building at 130 Flower Street in Berlin to Berlin Intermediate School and back. So there's going to be a shuttle running continuously starting from the multipurpose building at 9 a.m. and running throughout the event, and it will end shortly after noon when our event concludes. We're partnering with Delmarva Power, Choptank Electric Cooperative, Telemon, Worcester County Department of Social Services, Shore Up, Salvation Army, Worcester Youth and Family, and the Berlin Intermediate School to organize the event. Also, I wanted to say we could not hold the event without the support of our community. In addition to our sponsors, and there's a flyer back there with a lengthy list of them, I want to thank the Berlin Lionesses, the Kiwanis Club of Ocean Pines and Ocean City, Atlanta General Hospital, Worcester County Technical School Culinary Arts Program, and employees from the Town of Berlin for volunteering to help. They're helping with the setup on Friday, and they're helping with the event on Saturday. Again, there are flyers on the back table. Please grab some and help pass out the word, and we hope to see you on Saturday at BIS from 9 a.m. to noon. Oh, please.
There will also be a blood drive that day, so please come donate blood if you can. The Blood Bank of Delmarva will have their mobile blood bank trailer there, so if you can come out and do that, we would greatly appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's it.
Any questions for Laura? I don't have any comments. Is anybody?
Nothing.
Okay. Dean?
I just have to say, Jeff, could you see me after a meeting? I have a... I'd like for you to clarify a handout that you provided.
I have one comment.
Sure.
Happy Maryland Day.
Oh.
It is Maryland Day today to celebrate the initial settlement of Maryland in the 1600s.
Great. Hey. Very good. Very good.
Do you remember
that?
You were there?
Yeah.
You planted the first flag.
Our next on our agenda, does anybody here wish to address the mayor and council with any concerns, questions, or comments? Yes, sir.
I think it's good that you're having this session tomorrow. It's great to hear you welcome comments and criticism. It's also good to meet new people, but when you meet new people because a councilman calls them to trash your character for having a differing view than Do you have anything to say about that? I'll add, I also don't like it when I ask you budget questions and you ignore them. I think that's your job as a councilman, is it not?
Well, let's say we're all here. If there's something that you that specifically you'd like to know, I would very much, you know, either tonight or certainly tomorrow night, ask whatever question you like, and we'll certainly try our best. And maybe we can have an instantaneous answer. And if we can't, we can certainly get the information out, both through traditional media and through social media.
That's so, appreciated.
Sure. And
thanks for the non-answer, Tom.
I appreciate also so much everyone being very civil. Listen, we're going, no matter if we're celebrating good times or we're meeting new challenges, you know, mutual respect and civility is so important. And so I want to thank you again for your attendance tonight, encourage you to come again. And yes, ma'am.
My name is Samantha Pilsick. I live at 3 Decatur Street on the other side of the highway. And I'd like to ask if public comment, I'm not familiar with this process, so I apologize if I don't do it correctly.
Yes, sir.
But the difference between a commercial and a residential tax rate, at what point will you decide if you have to do a commercial and a residential as separate tax rates, or if you can keep that as the same tax rate as it has been?
I'll be very frank. It's not a secret process, by the way. I'm glad to see there's more interest than there's been in years. That's because we're changing the tax rate for the first time in 12 years in some manner. I will make a recommendation to the council at the April 1st meeting so that the budget that's being presented will be based on some level of revenue. Then as the council is reviewing all the different budgets at the two workshop hearings, they'll have an idea, okay, if we add something, what will that mean to the tax rate that has been proposed? If we cut something, are we able to cut it more? But I have to say this: I've made the decision, and you know, I've not shared it with anybody because nobody has really asked, that I'm going to recommend one tax rate across the board, and we'll see. I mean, we have to start somewhere, and I feel it's my responsibility to set the baseline and then see if that meets the needs, and if it needs to be adjusted. That's why there's more than one person. That's why the entire council makes these decisions.
And Mr. Mayor, there will be a public hearing before we set the tax rate, correct?
Oh, yeah.
By state law, we're required to do a public hearing.
But the thing from a reality, I mean, from a practical thing, we have to know what our revenue is before we can decide what all the expenses are. So that's why having a proposed rate literally a couple months before we actually approve it. And that's another thing, I know that this is not an enjoyable experience, I'm sure, for anyone. But that's another reason we initially talked about the tax rate in February, where by the process, the first time we have to talk about it is May. Well, that to me it's just not the way it should work. I mean, that's what you're legally required to do, but what we're trying to do is have a community discussion about it so you understand, everyone understands the what's and wherefores of why we're having to consider a rate increase. But and ask any question. Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir.
My name's Sean McGowan. I live at 5 Little Worth. I understand, obviously, tomorrow is listening session or whatever we focus on taxes. Is that the only thing we're allowed to talk about? We're not allowed to talk about certain money you guys spent on real estate or anything like that? It also pertains
to it's anything expense-wise. In other words, it's revenues and fees. In other words, the things we're proposing to change are property taxes and our water fees, water, sewer, weight, and stormwater.
Right.
And so anything related, it's not just that, but any question you have is fair game, and we're not trying to restrict it. We're trying to make it.
We're trying, in my understanding from being here at the last meeting, we're trying to, you know, our test bus costing too much, our general fund's going down. So
The reserve.
The reserve.
Yes, yes, sir. That's fine.
Other ways to put money back in.
Of course, absolutely. We encourage it. And we're open, you know, to all ideas, and then collectively we'll just make the best judgment we can. But we're encouraging participation. And I'll be frank, for the last several years, and it's happening everywhere, not just Berlin, I think it's the pace of life. People are so caught up in just trying to get through day by day, and the general atmosphere beyond our borders. I think a lot of people have basically said, "I just don't want to get involved," and that's not helpful either. So hopefully, you know, we can do this as long as we're civil and we can talk about anything. Yes, sir.
I can tell you that a lot of people don't feel that you really want to hear from them. And that's from talking to people in my neighborhood. That's from talking to our former chairman from the DSC. He doesn't think you really want to hear from us. And, I mean, I'm still here. Despite the efforts of the GUIs, I'm still going to express my opinion. And we can have a dialogue. But a lot of people really do. They don't think that you want to hear from us.
Well, that has to be an impression that they formed on their own, because we have never told people that they can't speak to us. And that goes way beyond this administration. Wait.
I'm not pointing a finger at you. No. I'm just saying that's how they feel. Well, I don't agree with you.
Well, I think another thing we're certainly looking at, and we're trying to figure out ways, how can we get information in front of people, so recognizing they don't have the time, right? They certainly may have the interest, but we're fighting time more than anything, I think. It's my
some of our sessions aren't advertised very far in advance. I mean, our council meeting, you send out the notice the Friday afternoon prior to the Monday meeting, mm-hmm. and everybody might know when the meeting is, but like does get in the way. And we don't know what the subject matter is. Some people don't care to come for everything. I don't want to go for myself unless I'm sitting there, and I'm not.
And I agree. I wish there was a magic solution, but we can't be the elected public servants. And the citizens too. And what we're looking at, and as just Gary mentioned, is okay. We recognize we're up against a change in the way people live, and the fact that there is so many demands on limited amount of time. There's not more hours in the day, so we're literally going to experiment and keep trying new ways of pushing more information out by social media. And that way, if a person they don't have to go anywhere, they can get on their computer or their tablet or their smartphone and get information, and they also have opportunities to send information. It works both ways. It's not a one-way street. But I have to tell you, I wish 10 years ago the internet was just really taking hold after what it's become, and now I think more people turn to it than ever for information. So rather than trying to bemoan change, we're going to try to adapt to it. And, you know, that's at least, and if anybody has any suggestions, we're all ears, because ironically, we're trying to get information out to the public. It's just, how do you get people's attention when they're so busy? I don't think it's because they don't care. Oh, yeah, I agree. That's one way. I won't recommend that as a normal, everyday way. No.
I had the dates for the lady who was asking about the process. So the introduction, first reading of the tax rate, there's like a first reading that happens. That'll occur on April 22nd at 7 p.m. here. And then there's a public hearing on the tax rate. And it's part of that public hearing, the mayor and council will be asked to adopt the tax rate, which means they'll set the tax rate. And that'll happen on May 13th here at 7 p.m. Yeah, actually, it's already posted on the website, and I think the newspapers have picked that up several times and put it in several different articles. And then we have actual state posting and noticing requirements where we actually have to buy a classified ad space in local newspapers of general circulation and put that out twice, 2 weeks before. There's a certain schedule we have to meet. So we do it a couple different ways. It's on the website. The newspapers usually do a good job of picking up what we're doing. And then we're required to purchase this ad space in 2 papers of local distribution, which I think is like 2 to 3 weeks beforehand. So.
And I know I just gave a plug to social media, and I would also like to remind folks to please, I encourage you, we have 2 newspapers covering this town. Most small towns don't even have 1. So we have 2 very credible newspapers. And quite frankly, they're not going to know everything, but you're going to be able to keep a pretty good pulse on what's going on. And I would encourage you, they're both online as well. So again, you don't have to go out and pick them up, although I'm sure that would be the preferred method. But if you can go online and get either paper every week. And I would just encourage you to do that. We're trying to get every bit of information out. That's the irony, is that hopefully through this process and in the years ahead, we'll figure out where are people getting their information. And right now, we feel like we have excellent coverage. We don't monitor what the newspapers say. They're free to say whatever they want. But we have very good coverage for a small town. But I do think that the social media part is something we need to do a better job, and I'm anxious. We're going to try and then get your input as well. Yes, ma'am.
Two things. First of all, the newspaper is great. My problem is my newspaper comes Thursday, and a lot of times the events are that weekend. So if there could be just a little bit, I love it. That's how I'll come up here, because I saw it in the newspaper. So if it just could give me like an extra week's notice.
Okay.
I don't know how you would work that, but that's my suggestion. And then my second question is, the first reading on April 22nd and then the hearing on the tax rate on May 13th, do both of those allow public comment?
Yes.
Or both
yes.
of those
yes.
closed
yes.
session?
Just like tonight.
Just like tonight?
Yeah. This way, we are very, we try to have, I think, very organized meetings, but we're not real strict on Robert's Rules of Orders. We're just mainly want to give people an opportunity to speak and, throughout the process. I mean, as you know, as we go through the agenda, we don't say, well, you can't speak on that until later. No, speak on it while we're considering something or being presented something. And we've been doing that a long time. And I would say, if you go to some other meetings, you would find that's not always the case, and we welcome the input. I'm very encouraged that we're getting what we are. Yes, sir.
First of all, I'd like to comment on this gentleman's comments. People I've talked to that were here, I wasn't able to attend the last council meeting. I can attend tomorrow night. The people that I have talked to that were here, plan to go tomorrow, their feeling is, you've already made up your decision. I don't care how many meetings you have. You've already made your decision what you're going to do.
We haven't even discussed it among ourselves. That's what, there's no secret, there's no other secret place.
I don't believe you haven't had any discussion.
No, just honestly.
That sounds like a stretch.
Nobody, I have not made any recommendation.
Our website reflects a 91 cent proposed rate beforehand.
And that was at the public meeting of February 21st when the council asked, can we see what impact that would have on revenues and budget expenses? You have to start somewhere. You have to start somewhere. It can't be all theoretical. And that was based on an inquiry made by this council at a public meeting right here that was open to everyone.
I have another question on that, but I'll let you finish.
Yes.
Go ahead. With our comparison on the tax rate study, you selected Worcester County as one comparable. Worcester County is not a municipality, so in my mind that shouldn't be on the sheet. You selected Snowhill and Buckmoke, they're regional. Salisbury is a small city, it's not a small town. And Princess Anne, which Princess Anne is a bigger town than we are, whether it's comparable or not, I haven't looked at their property values. But I think you could pick better comps. I looked at the State of Maryland website, and I came up with every small municipality on the Eastern Shore, and I compared to the small town that I grew up in, which is very comparable, in Chestertown. And there are a hell of a lot of tax rates that are lower than ours, as they are now, with some of the property value. So if you broaden your horizons on what you use as comps, and this looks like a sales pitch to me. If you broaden the horizons, it's going to show that our existing tax rate is already significantly higher than most small municipalities in the state of Maryland, especially if you consider the revenue generated off of the assessed value of our property. So that's going to paint a true picture of where we're at. This doesn't.
Yeah, certainly a welcome suggestion. I would say that it is interesting, the current increase in assessed value, which we hear that a lot. And correct me if I'm wrong, I think this year we pick up an additional $28,000 from the state of Maryland for rising values of property.
I'm comparing similar towns.
Yeah, but I'm just saying.
That's from the county.
No, that's from the state of Maryland. State of Maryland, we get $28,000 more dollars this next year than we get this year.
Okay, they reappraised my property, this area, this time.
and my appraisal is going up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I already pay the town of Berlin as much as I pay the county and state combined in property taxes. Oh, yeah. So they're going to raise my property taxes, the county is, which means if you do have, we'll say, a 20% increase, that's going to be on the new assessment that I've been assessed, which is going to make it even higher. Anyway,
sir.
Are you done? Okay.
Sir.
I got a lot more.
I missed your name. You live at One Cape Circle, you
yeah,
said?
Larry Smith.
Larry
One Cape
Smith.
Circle.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, I've been up here before, and I'm familiar with a lot of you from here and outside of here. I was here a couple years ago about the roads and Gulf Creek. Nothing happened. Then I saw you outside of here, and you did go down and look at my road, and you did say that I wasn't exaggerating about how bad they were. But then you told me, well, then there's a thing that came out in the paper, how true it is, I have no idea, that had where you paid to have the survey done for the roads. I don't believe they even came on the other side of 113 to look at any roads. Because I drove some of the roads that were on that list, and they're not even as bad as mine. Now, I offered to bring pictures 2 years ago of that road. Now, when I talked to you last year, you did go down there and look at them, and they did come down, fix the big potholes. But they fixed this pothole, they painted around it, they came down and fixed it. Well, there was a pothole right beside it that they didn't do anything to. Now, they came down last week and fixed a pothole down there. Well, here are pictures of just part of my street. And I will pass them out to anybody that wants to see them. I mean, they're crumbling. So there's two of the potholes that are still there. And I've got a phone full of them. And if anybody wants to look at these, I'll be glad to show them to you. But when I talked to you the last time on the phone, you said that you would get that pothole fixed, which you did. And you were going to see what they could do to stabilize that street. Because town of Berlin couldn't afford to fix that street unless you raised taxes. That's what you told me.
That's exactly right.
Well, now you're getting ready to raise taxes. When are you going to fix my street?
That's a good question. And a very appropriate one to ask. And it's very interesting because when we did that survey, first time the town had ever done it, that we got last May, June, something like that, it was very interesting that many of the streets we're having trouble with were never built to what we call town standards.
April?
Okay, thank you. So basically, they're streets that were never built to the standards that are required now are when we're having to redo streets. And that's why they're falling apart. Now, obviously, every street has to be repaved every so many years, depending on traffic and its usage and that kind of thing. But in reality, is that we have a situation where we've got to literally rebuild streets from scratch, from the base, not just the immediately below the asphalt, but go down and completely do the base and everything. And that's what's causing it to cost so much more. I think in West Street alone, what is that? What was West Street, that estimate we got there?
I'm looking at the report now. So sure. I'm trying to drill down and see what that cost would be.
The figures are astounding.
You told me that before. You had these developments that were put in, the streets weren't up to code. I ask you how long a street that was up to code is supposed to last. Mm-hmm. And you told me. Well, I've been in Gull Creek for 30 years. So you tried to tell me those streets weren't up to code. Well, they've
have not been that bad for 30 years, I'm going to tell you. And it was over what you said was the average lifespan of a street that was up for code. So, and then I have a question. Sure. I have heard that there is a plan to open up Decatur Street and the other street that goes down by me into the new development. Is that true?
No, it's not true.
No. It's not imminent, but First State Highway has to do some improvements and widening and things on 376. That's a state highway right off 113.
Mm-hmm.
And then Decatur Street, not now, but when it can be afforded, needs to be aligned with Flower Street. So it's a traditional intersection. That street got almost no minimum usage for years when there were just a couple houses along there. And then most people exited to the 113, not there, but farther south. So now we have a situation where as that area grows and develops, there's going to come a time when we need to align those streets. But we can't
I'm
even
talking about the streets between Gull Creek and Decatur Farm.
Mayor, if you don't mind, I'd like Dave Englehart to speak to this because it did come up quite a while ago, but it's not gone anywhere. Dave, can you talk about it a little bit?
So you're referring to the fire access there that goes right past the housing.
One on Decatur Street and one on Meadow Street.
Right, yeah. And no, they had talked to us. But see, the original Decatur Farm subdivision, the single family homes and the condominiums, that's what they call planned unit development.
Yeah.
So it got built as it was approved. So that road going through was never approved. And recently they had asked us about it, and we said, no, you can't do it. And, you know, we had input from the chief and the fire department. That access was strictly for emergency vehicles. And
yeah, it's never going to be paved.
It's not going to be paved.
Because a lot of people from Gull Creek came up and fought having it go straight through originally when they started Decatur Farms. And we were told it would never go straight through. That's why it was going to be a grass area,
right.
and it would never be through.
And that's what we've been sticking to. It's come up to us, and we've told them, no, it's a planned unit development. That's how it'll stay. Because the original neighbors in your area and the Gull Creek assisted living at the apartments and all there, they thought that would be a bad impact on traffic in the area. People, you know, racing out to work or racing in to pick up the kids for soccer and things. Going that direction would not be a good idea.
My concern was, you can't take care of the roads you got now. Why would you open it up? That was my only concern.
So anyway, back to my original question.
I mean, if you're on that side of the highway, especially where I'm at, we're like the red-headed stepchildren over there. I mean, I brought this up 2 years ago when I was here. It depends on who you are and where you live if anything gets done in this town.
You're entitled to that opinion, but it is much different from this.
And for 2 years, I keep hearing stuff about the streets over here. Well, I mean, they're even worse than they were when you came down and looked at them. And like I said, you told me that you would have to raise taxes to fix that road. Well, mm-hmm. Evidently, you're going to raise taxes anyway, and I'm sure that last time I talked to you, it was already in the works to do that. And
but
now you want to raise fees.
They don't have a choice.
And everything else. So I want to know, I'm going to pay all this extra money. When am I going to get a benefit out of it? Just like a lot of other people that were here last week or last meeting, probably some of the people that are here now.
You're asking about your street, but it's for that and everything else as well.
Mayor,
yes,
well,
yes.
There are 10 streets on this report. There are 10 streets in front of your street. Those streets include Bottle Branch, which we plan on addressing this year, Grace Street, Harrison Avenue at $375,000, Shawl, Stevenson, Tingle, West Branch, Decatur Street, Flower Street, Cape Circle. So it's, let's see, if you include Harrison Avenue.
Like I said, this depends on who you are, where you live, if anything gets done.
But these were not our judgments. These were based on engineering assessments.
Which you paid a fee to have, right? Didn't you pay an engineering fee company to come do that?
Of course you did. They don't do it for free.
I mean, all this mayor and council and the city engineer or whatever have to do is drive down them streets, and they can tell which ones are which. I mean, I've driven down some of those streets, and I don't know how they made it to the top of the list. That's all I got to say. I'm not trying to upset anybody or anything else.
I don't think that's your intention.
I mean, for over 2 years, I've been trying to get something done, and it keeps getting farther and farther behind. And they come down there and they patch one little place. Well, the patches, right around the patches, is crumbling and they keep getting worse. Now, they've come down there and patched and filled potholes probably 6 times in the last 10 years, maybe. I mean.
Larry, you know we go back a long
time. Yeah, we time do. I go back this. A long way with the mayor, too. Yeah. And
but it's so many streets right now that need to be repaved. And we took the professional advice from our engineers, the ones that need it the most. And that's what we're going by. It's not where you live. Because, look, I got on the council because of streets. That's the only reason I'm sitting here today, because I fought streets. I fought the street I live on.
Yes,
and
you
my
did.
Street takes more traffic than any street in Berlin. It takes 30 school buses a day.
Yeah.
And not counting the parents that go from school to school. You can't even get out of my driveway in the morning and in the afternoon. So that street was so bad at one time. That's the only reason I'm on this council right now.
I know how bad it was. You know I delivered mail on that street.
I know you did.
And I know how bad that street is, and I know how bad some of the other streets were, and I know how bad my street is now.
But we're looking at streets. It's not like we're not looking at them. We're trying to do something to all the streets.
Well, I mean, you can only do so many potholes. I mean, if you fixed all the potholes on that street, you'd have it repaved. I mean, and I ask you, when I saw you the last time up here in town, I said, what do I got to do? Go to McDonald's to get my potholes fixed? Not McDonald's, but Domino's. Domino's Pizza. I mean, they'll come down here and fix my potholes, evidently.
Hey, we need money, write a letter.
You know, I just think this town is bleeding money, and it's bleeding it in the wrong places. They got too many white elephants that they've purchased or expanded to or whatever, and it's costing this town dearly now. I just think this town has too many white elephants.
Thank you.
I have a question for the lady that asked a question about tax rate.
Yes, sir.
Would you mind sharing your preference as to which would you prefer, the same rate or a tiered rate?
Same rate.
Thank you.
Commercial properties are assessed at a higher value, so to put them at also a higher tax rate sort of seems
onerous.
Double digging.
Thank you, ma'am.
So if they were assessed at the same value rate as residential, then when it's a commercial, you tax it at a higher rate. But since they're assessed at a higher value, it just doesn't seem fair.
Thank you.
I have a question about the roads.
Yes, certainly.
I'm his neighbor.
Yeah.
I live on Decatur.
This man, too.
Well, but I'm on the list. I made
on the list.
They'll just swing around the corner and get you. But my question is, how would you line up for
The engineers worked that. Literally, if you have a traditional intersection,
right,
you know, then
plus sign.
Yeah, plus sign. Then when you come across, it is all the property that the town owns is contiguous and allows for that to happen, and then the road makes a turn and then you
first
go straight.
In front of the police station.
Yeah, so by the time it gets to the police station, it's straight again.
Okay.
But that basically, the best way I can say is if this is Bay Street extended, it would go like this, angled, and then straight again, but rather than the way it loops now.
I'd have to see that. Okay.
Yeah.
And then, would you mind that you were going over the costs of the different streets, and what you mentioned the one was going to be $375,000. Is that how you'll prioritize them based on the money that it's going to cost to fix them?
Not exclusively, because we don't get $300,000 from the state for highway user's tax, which is what we dedicate our street work. So it's about $200,000 that we get from the state for highway user's tax money that we turn around and put into our roads. And so
is there additional money that goes into roads, or is it just that $200,000 a year?
Sometimes it depends. So a lot of times that extra money will come from the general fund, it'll go into sidewalks. But usually it's about what the highway user's tax equivalent is to the town. That's usually what we put back into roads, which
so
is part of why it makes
it
challenging.
You basically only have $200,000 a year to fix roads?
Sometimes we give it a little more. It depends on what the projects are. But so to answer your question, it depends. It's really the answer. And we try to stretch those dollars as far as we can. So we're still working on what the streets would be for the fiscal 20 budget. I think the mayor and council are going to have some difficult decisions to make because the intersection realignment, Decatur and Flower, we estimate it's going to be about $500,000.
Yeah. I can say I don't think any of us are going to jump on that when we've got all the other needs that we already have. I'm just being very frank. I don't want people worrying about things that go bump in the night. I just think that obviously we have to do whatever we need to do as a town to make sure that the new improvements on Bay Street Extended, that we make whatever adjustments we need to make in our property, town property, and public right-of-way, but that's not going to be any hundreds of thousands of dollars.
So you won't pave Decatur Street Extended until you're able to do the Flower Street, Bay Street realignment? You won't pave any of Decatur Street Extended until then?
No. What was it? The realignment.
Yeah.
The realignment and paving are two separate things.
That's what I was asking.
And realignment, I just don't see it happening this year. I mean, it would,
$500,000.
And this is one of the dilemmas, is that the cost of doing all these infrastructure projects, which, quite frankly, there was a reason those roads, some worked just fine, others maybe should have been tackled 30 years ago. But, you know, business, there's only a limited amount of money at any such time. So what we have to decide, and as a community, is how much do we want to pay, how fast to get things done. And that's what really the budget process boils down to. And so that's why we welcome public input, because we think it'll help us make the best decisions we can given the limited resources we have.
I have two comments.
Yes, sure.
First, Laura, we have the public access channel, correct?
Yep.
Do we post the agenda on the public access channel?
Your mayor and council channels?
Correct.
Yes.
Yes.
Is there any way that we can put the audio from our meetings to play at periodic times on that television circuit? Can we look into that?
I don't know if that'll work, but usually these are posted on the website within 24 hours of the meeting.
Yeah. Right.
I just didn't know if there was any way that we could disseminate those a little bit better for people to...
They're available on the website starting the morning after the meeting.
Okay.
And there are so many things on that public access channel that the agenda only usually stays on the screen for about 15 seconds, so which they say is enough time to be reading all of that, but it's just there's so many things circulating. That one circulates the most, but...
I'd like to ask a question, too, because obviously I recognize that people they've got all these other obligations, but they wish to have more information, which we wish them to have. is it possible that we could, in having live streaming of what's being said at the meeting, and people could be at home listening to what's going on at the meetings?
Are you talking about live streaming these meetings?
Yeah. I'm just asking.
Are you talking about live streaming any meetings?
No, but I'm saying, I'm just trying to explore.
Channel?
No, forget that. I'm talking about everybody, more people, there are more digital devices now than there are people in the world. I bet most people, it won't be 100%, but I'd say 95% of people in this town, from probably age 13 or 14 up, have one of these digital devices or more. And if there's a way in which, wherever they are, they're, no matter what they're doing, they could just turn it on, keep cleaning up the house or do whatever else you got to do, but you can listen to the meeting. Is there a way technologically that we could explore with D3 or someone that we could do that?
Or Sam, like to see if somebody, if some way, I know we talked about this earlier on, probably a year or two ago, but if we could re-explore that, I think it would be perfect.
Yeah. I'm not sure what we're re-exploring.
So people can listen to the meetings as they're happening.
Okay. As they're happening,
yeah. Yeah, because the next morning, I suspect people, I know, I appreciate people coming who do come. By tomorrow morning, people usually have a lot to do. So then it might be the next evening if they think of it. So, you know, it's not a judgment thing. It's just trying to adapt to the reality. It's not the 1970s when people used to come to meetings because they were looking for something to do.
Right. So
there was so little going on.
We can look at that. My understanding about Facebook Live is it's limited to being able to be circulated within the Facebook community only.
Right.
And so you can't take that. If you do Facebook Live, you can't record that and push that out broadly beyond people that are on Facebook. So it has that constraint, but we can look at all
that. And again, it may take more than one strategy. And if we can't do it all at once, maybe we can start one place.
Well, we did. We started last week with Facebook Live.
Yeah, during our resilience meetings.
Yep.
And it was good because we had, I think, 100 people following it, and people were able to submit questions in that format because that was the whole idea.
And the second thing.
Yes.
I forgot during our comment. Chief, could you please take a look at the intersection of Jefferson and Grace? I've received a couple of concerns about people parking and it being difficult to exit that street. If you could just take a look at that, please. Thank you. That was my one over.
Any other questions or comments? Yes.
To your point on being able to participate or go back and review the meetings, we do have the recordings available on the town website. I've tried to play a few of those meetings I couldn't come to where there's topics that I'd like to listen to. Mm-hmm. And the audio is interrupted with plugs to come visit downtown Berlin and commercials. It draws out a 2-hour meeting to twice the length of time that it needs to be with breakpoints and plugs. I don't understand.
That's interesting.
I have
you let us know
no idea why that
Jason,
would be.
Could you let us know what dates those are? Because I've listened to
the
recordings and I've never heard that.
Yeah.
It's not our intent. So
well, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
So
you can let us know what dates those are, then we can have
an
idea.
Yeah, if I hear it again, I'll write
sure.
My
I agree.
Last question or comment was about streets and what he was saying. You mentioned the highway user fee.
Uh-huh.
Is the amount that we receive what's reflected in the general fund budget?
What number do you have?
It's like $157,000.
That's about right.
Yes.
Okay. So for next year, we're expecting to get about $212,000, something like that, right?
Okay.
I think the state's been working hard, and there's this organization called the Maryland Municipal League, which is an association of municipalities.
Right.
And what it sounds like. That's been advocating for the state to return highway users' revenues back to the local community so they can use that to invest that into their roadways. And so that's made progress. But what we've been told is this is like it, and you can expect all of that to be retrenched over the next coming, you know, I guess in the rest of this next several legislative cycles.
Yeah,
so,
I can see what we got in the past because you can only go back to, I think, 2014 on the website.
Right, right. Town used to get a lot more before the recession of 2008.
Well, actually, Martin O'Malley stole that money and used it for other things.
I can't comment on that.
Yeah.
But it's been a challenge. You used to get a lot more. And so one of the challenges to the budget process is to what extent do we tap from other resources within the general fund to maintain the roadways.
Right. Well, one of the other suggestions that the Municipal League had was that instead of showing the highway user revenue as a line item in general fund budget that actually goes to streets, because when you put that in the general fund, you can just put it in the slush and do what you
that's the thing I do.
It shows up as a general fund.
It's general funds. It's a general fund.
And I do appreciate.
It shows $10,000 allocated for street repair. I didn't see the capital.
Capital outlay account, so it's old streets repairs go into the capital outlay streets. It's in general fund. So the revenue reported in general fund revenues, the expense reported in streets.
I'll look for that.
And I'd just like to add that we're limited in terms of what we can do in terms of that reporting. We have to follow generally accepted accounting principles set by the Government Accounting Standards Board.
This is a pretty wide variance in how municipalities do it.
So those municipalities might have an auditor that would say things like what you're doing isn't quite appropriate. But most cities are required to follow GAAP, and we do. That's why when the auditors come, we have a completely clean opinion that's unqualified, which means that we're doing what we're supposed to be doing in accordance with those government accounting standards.
Okay, I'm pretty sure the other ones I've looked at follow this standards pretty
well. Any other questions or comments?
Press.
Does the press have any questions or comments?
Move to adjourn. All
right. Thank you so much for your attendance and participation.
How far have you made it across the country?
You have got me that info.
Come on. I swam 2 miles. And I did a run.
In
like five.
In Worcester County, use this title.
Yeah, and I think
Pope
is
tired.
It's pretty good.
It's a good system.
Yeah. It really is. And
it has become a blessing, not a curse.
That's it. I can't believe you doodle over that piece of paper I gave you. The age related to. Took an average. Okay. When I went there, they did not get on turn. What age is related to
got something from your son?